the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome back to the Spirit of Jazz. This is Bill Carter.
And I'm Jeff Kellum. We're moving into the second part of a lengthy conversation we had with a wonderful pianist, Bill Mays.
That's right. So let's pick it up and see what he has to say. Let's talk about the trio you're playing with Dean and Ron these days. We've heard you play a number of times at the Deerhead, at my home haunt in Clark Summit. One of the things that catches me is that you generally don't play tunes. You don't say, there is no greater love, and then start off in B flat and just play it from scratch. You have arrangements, and you've rehearsed these things, and yet there's a great deal of more freedom. Can you say about that process and writing for other musicians, and particularly that tension between structure and freedom?
Well, first of all, in that trio, we actually do have about a half dozen things that are unstructured, that are just lead sheets or tunes that we just know. For example, Star Eyes, A Beautiful Friendship, Some Other Time, just to give you an idea. Mm-hmm. And I like to incorporate both things that are open with no chartage, just chords that hopefully we don't have to look at. And then I really enjoy writing. I've always been an arranger for most of my career. And I love coming up with a concept of how a tune, I like to set a mood, paint a picture. And sometimes the best way to do that is to be very specific. And so I will write something that has a great degree of arrangement to it, like Darn That Dream, for example, or very little, like the tune Dream by Johnny Mercer that follows Darn That Dream in a medley that we play and we recorded. You know, trust comes into it in a big way. I trust that the musicians will be able to interpret what I'm hearing without me having to say much, and that's usually the case. I can make verbal references to other recordings or stylistically to what that drummer played on that tune or what that bass player played on this tune. So that helps the process, but it's always a kick to see how people respond to what I've written, both in the very arranged stuff or the more open stuff, and see what they bring to it. And then I'm also not married to what I've written. If it really doesn't lay well, or it just doesn't really work, I'm the first one to say, let's change it. But for me, a successful set of music is a combination of the structured stuff and the looser stuff. And Ron and Dean have played so many kinds of music with so many different people, and they're of a certain age that they get where I'm coming from. We're all coming from the same listening experiences, and we've had a lot of playing experience together. The first time that we were a trio was with Jerry Mulligan. We were in his rhythm section in the mid to late 80s. So also Dean is very good with the bow, so I can write arco segments and know that he'll pull them off. And Ron is certainly much more than a drummer. He's a percussionist. In fact, I wrote a piece called Next Right Thing where he plays sandpaper blocks. And the concept of the tune is it's honoring tap dancing and soft shoe. And then there are some theater pieces. I wrote a thing called Pay Attention where we just played free with nothing written, and there were also spoken segments. It was inspired by my going through a spell where I couldn't find my car keys or my wallet, where I hit something with my car a number of things had gone down a couple of years ago where I wasn't paying attention. So I love theater pieces. In my group Inventions with Marvin Stamm and Elisa Horn, I wrote several suites and incorporated everything from sitting around a campfire like cowboys talking about the old days. And it was a real Garrison Keillor moment, I think. So I do have a flair for drama that comes to the fore in my playing and in my presentations.
Well, the other great pianist, Lyle Mays, no relation, used to say that if you reduce music to melody, harmony, and rhythm, you are missing a lot of the other essential pieces. And drama was one of those pieces. There should be a rise, a fall. There should be a narrative. It should unfold. There should be some conflict and some resolution.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Phil Woods used to say, put the horn away, tear down the music stand, and go to an art museum, or go have a five-star dinner in a Michelin restaurant, or go read a book. And he said, that'll help make you a better musician. And that's certainly true. I'm a big reader. I read a lot these days, and I'm on a news fast, so I'm not reading or listening to the news at all. It's given me about an extra hour and a half a day to read. And I think that certainly reading fiction and reading plays, for example, has helped that, as you mentioned, that arc and the rise and the fall, a plot, a beginning, a middle, and an end, and helps increase the possibility for dramatic happenings in the music.
Well, let's talk about this some more, because I had mentioned to you, I wanted to pick your brain. How do you cultivate the artistic life?
How do I cultivate my artistic life?
Yeah.
I'm always doing it. I believe I'm always searching for beauty in everything, whether it's my garden on the deck, making a meal, conversing with somebody. I try to be completely in the moment and completely present. And how I cultivate that is through daily meditation, being involved with music in some way every day, and I am. It can be practicing the keyboard. It can be listening to music. And it can be score study, which I'm doing a lot of right now. Working on your career in terms of booking work. You've got to be creative when you're trying to sell yourself as a musician. Mm-hmm. I hate doing it, and I've had agents in the past do it for me, and still work occasionally with agents, but I do a lot of it on my own. I don't think much about it. I'm just always in the music, always with the music in some way. Also, it's good to get away completely from with a good book or a good game of Scrabble. For me, being active physically, I either swim or ride the bike or play tennis, do something like that every day. And that's a wonderful way to help my focus and my creativity.
Bill, you and I are of a certain age. What do you learn from some of the younger musicians? What do they have to teach, or what do you have to learn?
Well, I learn how little they know and how little they've listened. I'm working with some students, one's from Brazil, and she never heard of Antonio Carlos Jobim. Now, she's only 17, but give me a break. And some of the trumpet players that are in their late teens have never heard of Thad and Mel. I did a clinic a couple of years ago for piano students, and none of them had heard Art Tatum play. So one of the great joys of working with younger people is to hip them to the music of the people they should be listening to, you know. As great a pianist as Brad Meldow is, it didn't start with him, which is one of the people that this pianist said he was listening to, but hadn't heard of Hank Jones and hadn't heard of Art Tatum. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to some younger pianists that are coming up and enjoying them. And I'm happy that they're tipping their hat in their playing and in their talking to the audience, to the older musicians, the people that influenced us all. And, you know, I find it's a shame that so many young pianists don't know about Nat Cole, the piano player. They don't know about Meadlux Lewis and Albert Ammons. and stride. And so that's part of what I'm doing when I play, is to educate people to the earlier era.
Yeah, good for you.
I do a program called A Brief History of Jazz Piano, mm-hmm. and it lasts 2 hours. And I take on about 22, 23 pianists. I start with Jelly Roll and then Tatum. And I go through, I've incorporated amongst the newer people, I've incorporated music by Renee Rosnes and by Fred Hirsch and by Mike Wofford, one of my idols and one of my early influences, Mike Wofford, the pianist who lives in California. And in between, I've got a list of 100 pianists and I have to choose and I mix it up. I've done this program many times. I'll mix it up depending on my mood and whatnot. But it's fun, man. I've been everybody from Cecil Taylor, Hallelujah, to Marion McPartland.
And your sense of history. I'll never forget the night I went down to hear you at the local NPR station up here, by where we both live in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And you're doing a solo concert. And at the end, they were running short on time. You said, anybody want to hear something? So I called out Grandpa's Spells.
Oh.
And you gave me a look. And then you played it.
It's a tough piece, of course. It's got the left-hand stride going through the whole thing, Jelly Roll Morton, and some interesting and challenging right-hand things. It's an amazing piece. Along with James P. Johnson's Carolina Shout. I think those are two staples every pianist would have a ball working on.
Yeah, if your fingers don't break. Well, and let's talk about the book a little bit. You have collected scores of stories. I can't imagine to see your journals or your cocktail napkins or whatever else you've scribbled these on.
Literally, yeah. Funny stuff would happen and I'd jot it down and throw it in a shoebox. 10 years ago, I decided to write a book. I kind of always thought I'd write at least a pamphlet. And I also went back, I keep all of my diaries. So I went back to those and read through and that jogged my memory of both this happened on that gig or that happened. And then I also looked at all the records that I was on as a sideman. When I lived in Hollywood, I made a lot of records with non-jazz musicians. And that brought back a lot of funny memories, stories of stuff that happened in on the bandstand or a lot of stuff in studios that was pretty hilarious.
Can you think of one great story that maybe is in the book or not?
Yeah, here's a great story. We were at Universal with a large orchestra. You'd often do a six-hour session for a TV show or a movie, and I don't remember what it was, but it was Universal. And you take a break after 3 hours of recording, a lunch break, and we took the break and came back, and the piano, as is often the case in studios, was covered with big packing blankets and close mic'd. I don't like the sound that they get on that way of doing the piano, but it was the case this day. And we rehearsed a cue and recorded, and they were listening back in the recording booth, and they discovered some strange noise on the recording, and they couldn't figure out what it was. They started isolating because everybody's isolated with their own mic and with baffles and some people in isolation rooms. It's not in the string section. It's not in the trumpet. It's not in the drum booth. Wait, it's coming from the piano mic. What is that? They played it and they discovered it sounded like somebody snoring, and underneath the piano was the great guitar player, Tommy Tedesco. When the orchestra had gone to lunch, he crawled under the piano and took a nap, and he was not on that cue that we were recording at that moment. He was tacit, so nobody missed that. He didn't miss him not being in his chair, and there he was, sound asleep. And of course, the orchestra broke up and woke him up, and we redid the cue. So that was pretty hilarious.
Well, and there's something, and non-musicians might not understand this, but there's a camaraderie among musicians that is just good humor. if it's flowing.
Well, speaking of flowing and camaraderie, I got to tell you one more. Victor Feldman, the great everything player, Victor Feldman was English. He was a child prodigy as a drummer. And he worked with Miles Davis on Seven Steps to Heaven. And he was a mainstay in the Hollywood studios as a multi-percussionist. And there was an instrument that came out in the 70s called the Mellotron. It was an early sampler. You could record any sound on tape and that went round and round in the Mellotron. And then you could, with the use of a keyboard, play that sound on different pitch levels. Therefore, you know, you could play a tune on it. Well, again, the double session, the orchestra goes to lunch. Victor stays behind and farts into the Mellotron microphone and manipulates it. Then he tells the engineer who's still in the booth, he says, roll tape. He hits the record button and Victor proceeds to play the Star Spangled Banner with the fart sound. The orchestra comes back from lunch. And this shows you what a sense of humor the contractor on the date had. She said, before we record, we want to have you hear Victor Feldman's handiwork that he did on the break. And they played that for us. Ah, the old days.
Ah, the old days is right. And as that conversation winds up, we also were fortunate to have a conversation with him and his trio some months ago. I'm going to ask them some questions backstage, and then we'll hear a little music.
So what exactly are they doing? And the answer is, this is improvised chamber music. That's what this is. And what we had in our first set, we had a little bit of we had jazz standards, or standard tunes that have been jazzed up. We've had things that were completely rearranged, right? And then the 12-step piece sounded at points like film music. You think?
Well, maybe so. You know, when an architect builds a house, he's working from blueprints. And there are subcontractors, and there are lots of elements to building a house. So it's structured. There are plans. When we play this music, there are structures. There is a certain set number of bars in a song. And there are certain chord changes that we're improvising on top of, to put it in a quick nutshell. At times in those pieces, looking at the first set, we leave the chord structure and we freely improvise. And I like to think of it as soundscapes, and we're playing off of each other. And it's completely untalked about or unplanned. Dean might play something on the bass that conjures up a certain feeling. I get a certain feeling inside, and I'm playing off of that feeling or that mood. Or Ron may play something rhythmic that takes me off in a certain direction. Some things are very arranged, like the first two pieces, Autumn Serenade, Lullaby of Leaves. Fall was very open. We're just working from a real simple sketch, a lead sheet. One of these days is just a lead sheet. 12 steps, just quickly. I don't want to talk for the next 45. Oh, why not?
Do that.
My dad was a preacher. I'm used to talk. 12 steps was built on there are 12 tones in the scale, in the Western scale. And I built that tune 12 steps on a 12-tone row. Somebody recognized it out there, yes. Did you study with Nadia Boulanger in Paris? So anyway, that's, and then sometimes we have played in concert completely free. There is no talking. I will just point to one of the
fellas, and they'll start playing something, and we'll make a composition that way, or I'll start it. Enough from me. Does anybody else want to add to that? Dean? Dean seems to be shy, but he's actually quite vivacious and loquacious.
Yeah, you want to say something, Don?
For me, this is really a fun group to play with because of what Bill said. Everything is very open and anything goes. As long as it's musical, anything goes. We can do whatever we want. I might suggest a rhythmic idea. Bill picks up on it, and then the whole band shifts in that direction. And then Bill will play something, and we'll shift back to where we were before. So it's where the concentration is what it's all about, really, hearing what's going on with everybody at the same time. And at the same time, remembering the song that you're playing and that and its form. It has a form, and we might occasionally make a group decision to leave the form, but we know we've left the form, so we always know where we are, and that's, yeah, hopefully. Of course, there's been a few, well, I don't want to get into that, but that's the fun of it for me, because it's totally creative. Anything can happen, and we're taking chances, because we don't know if anything's going to happen. I might play something, and it might stink.
And I think that's such an important thing to tell any artist, painter or dancer or performer. Don't be afraid to take chances and don't be afraid to fail. You never will get to the next level if you're not afraid to make a mistake and fail. And at the same time, we're always trying to, I say, shoot the editor that stands up here on your shoulder. That editor can be the music teacher he had as a child that said, you're no good, you'll never be able to play this instrument, or a parent that discourages you, or anybody. We need to shoot the editor and become fearless and move forward and find our voice in our painting or our piano playing or our whatever the endeavor is. Now I'm getting off into the weeds.
You know what? Why don't you guys, let's just play.
Yeah. Oh, see, well, we've done it now. Okay. But didn't you have four more questions?
If you want.
Give us one more. I want to see what
you come up
with.
Give you one more. So it's like you're dancing together in the air.
Well, that's nicely put. Yeah, we are.
You know, it's kind of a ballet that's created in the moment. But there's an architecture to it. I mean, one of the things, Bill, I love about your music, and I've heard this group now four times, is that there's an architecture structure to the performance, and there is always an excellence in the right chord choice and the movement and the drama. And yet, there's freedom to just kind of go for it. And you guys do. And I love that. Thank you.
We've been listening to Bill Mays, wonderful pianist, composer, master of both classical and jazz. And he's been talking with his trio and playing with them, with Ron Vincent and Dean Johnson. Thanks for tuning in to this episode.
We encourage you to go to the PresbyBop.com website or to the BillMays.net website and find more information.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.